Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, even as reproductive issues are at the center of the national discourse, a conversation about the choices and circumstances many women and couples are facing for National Infertility Awareness Week. Also this morning in our community and business spotlight, looking for work? Ohio Means Jobs is highlighting opportunities for taxi and delivery drivers through T&H Lyft. You're going to see a lot of caring people hard at work around town this weekend as part of the Backyard Mission trip, and it's never too late to pitch in and help your neighbors. We have details, along with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, April 26th, 2024. You know that every day we have to have something to worry about. There has to be some doom and gloom story in the news, something that we are worried about, concerned over, wringing our hands over, and you know, upset about. And here is today's story. A new study says that there is a shortage of veterinarians in the U.S. This actually is pretty serious. They say the problem could get worse before it gets better. Researchers at Mars Veterinary Health have found 47 states are currently facing some sort of veterinarian shortage, and one factor may be the high cost of vet school. The study says that veterinary school, I mean, it's a medical degree, and so it costs a lot of money, and vets typically make less money than doctors do. Of course, they can see more patients than doctors do generally, but it's not as lucrative a profession as human doctors. The study says by the year 2030, there could be 15,000 fewer vets than needed in the U.S. for pet care. So we have a veterinarian shortage. That's what we're worried about today. That is the story that we're worried about, fearful of, you know, the doom and gloom story of the day. So the weekend is coming up. You going to the movies? This was kind of interesting. A new survey of 2,000 Americans finds that the perfect movie length is about an hour and a half, 92 minutes to be exact. 92 minutes is the perfect movie length. The average person appears to be tired of marathon movies. Only 2% believe that a movie should last longer than 2.5 hours. Think Oppenheimer or anything by Francis Ford Coppola. In the past 60 days, the folks in the survey here, again, 2,000 movie-going Americans, in the past 60 days, respondents feel that they have watched two movies that were too long on average. Yep. 92 minutes, the perfect. Movies that are that perfect length include Monsters, Inc., Toy Story 2, Beetlejuice, Kung Fu Panda, and Dodgeball. So that classic Dodgeball is the perfect, not the perfect movie necessarily, but the perfect movie length. So make sure that we clarify that. Some of the other most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day in the least surprising research study of the year thus far. I think we could classify this as the least surprising research study of the year thus far. It is a new study that claims that five companies are responsible for about 25% of the world's plastic pollution. And at the top of the list, Coca-Cola and PepsiCo. Coca-Cola found to be the biggest source of branded plastic pollution. And that company alone accounts for 11% of branded plastic waste. Researchers analyzed data from 1,500 litter surveys in 84 countries globally. Volunteers examined over 1.8 million pieces of plastic and noted the brands and the labels associated with them. Coca-Cola, number one, and food and beverage products in general tend to be the top contributors because they have shorter time periods of use before you throw them out, including a much higher percentage of single-use items. The authors of the study note reduced plastic production is a primary solution to curb plastic pollution. But is this a surprise to anyone that the two biggest soft drink companies in the world are the top producers of plastic pollution? And it's research from the file of this morning. But it's true. And because it's long been, you know, it was decades ago that soft drinks would come in glass bottles, and they're all in plastic bottles now. I mean, you can't get them. Well, I guess they're aluminum cans, but 90% of the, I would wager to say 90% of the soft drinks sold, or drinks in general sold in this country, come in plastic containers. So no big surprise there at all. Did you hear about this big news yesterday with summer vacation season right around the corner? Now, this will not be in effect for this summer vacation season, but I believe it'll be in place. These rules will be in place by the time the holiday travel season rolls around. President Biden's crackdown on corporate junk fees being the centerpiece of his economic program. Airlines now being held to account. Not only are they requiring that the airlines list any and all extra fees clearly and accurately on their websites when providing quotes for your airline fare, but also the administration has announced new rules requiring them to issue cash refunds automatically in certain cases. The rules make clear that airlines must automatically give passengers a full refund of their ticket price when flights are canceled or significantly delayed. When the baggage return is delayed significantly, or when customers do not receive in-flight amenities that they paid for, like Wi-Fi, they'll have to refund your money rather than just issue a flight credit or something like that. So provisions, and there are multiple layers of these provisions, will be implemented, it says here, on timelines ranging from 6 months to 2 years. So, but that is a big change. I don't know if the airline's going to fight this and how hard they will fight, or will they take this to court? Will they try and take it all the way to the Supreme Court? Who knows? But yeah, refunds if your flights are canceled or significantly delayed. Now, if they're delayed, I don't know that they'll have to refund the entire ticket price. Obviously, if a flight is canceled, it'd be required to refund the entire price of the ticket. I would imagine that it will be prorated depending on the length of the delay, but still kind of interesting. And lastly this morning, among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. If you want your 15 minutes of fame on one of the many TV reality shows, the best way to do that is to learn to cook. A new study says the two Gordon Ramsay Fox shows offer your best shot of appearing as a contestant of all of the reality shows out there. The website HelloMillions.com tracked Google data for the number of people who searched phrases like casting call for such and such a show or apply for such and such a show for 19 of the top reality shows. They studied 19 different reality shows. They looked at casting call searches and then compared that to the number of contestants on a given show per season. So basically, they were figuring out how tight is the competition for every slot for a contestant on the show. With that in mind, Hell's Kitchen had the lowest number of monthly searches for applications, an average of 1,598 national searches, and each season has 18 participants. And so you have the greatest chance of getting on that show of any of the other reality shows. And that's probably because you actually have to have a specific skill to be in the kitchen with Gordon Ramsay to begin with. So that whittles down the pool of eligible contestants because you pretty much have to be able to cook going in. Coming in second was The Bachelorette. Despite the show's popularity, you still have a decent shot of getting on the show, considering each season has 26 contestants and there are only 2,400 or so monthly searches inquiring how to apply. Coming in third was Squid Game, The Challenge. There are nearly 43,000 monthly searches for how to join up, but the show has the largest pool of contestants per season at 456. So your odds are the third best for that show. The fourth easiest show to get on, according to the site, was another Gordon Ramsay reality hit, MasterChef. 2,359 monthly searches, 20 wannabe winners each season. And rounding out the top five was The Bachelor, with nearly 5,000 monthly searches and 33 hopefuls on the show. So those are the top five easiest reality shows to appear on if you are interested. By the way, the hardest show to get on is Love Island on CBS. Love Island. Every month, there are 16,322 searches for how to apply for the show compared to 33 contestants. So that is the hardest show to get on. There you go. Important information this morning. We want to make sure that you know about all of the important things. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your TGI Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly to mostly sunny today, a high around 70. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 60. A Putnam County grand jury has indicted a man in connection with a deadly shooting at a business in Lipsick. 26-year-old Connor Dunkley is facing charges of aggravated murder, murder, and attempted murder. A pretrial hearing has been set for May 20th in Putnam County Common Pleas Court. The Putnam County Sheriff's Office said on April 18th it received 911 calls about shots being fired at Kitchen Enterprises Trucking Company. When law enforcement and medical personnel arrived, they found a 30-year-old woman deceased. A 54-year-old man was also injured and taken to a hospital. Authorities say the suspect, Dunkley, fled the scene in a vehicle and was pursued by several police agencies and apprehended in Allen County. Get more on this case in the story on our website. Ohio U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown's Fend Off Fentanyl Act has been signed into law by the president.
It would crack down on fentanyl traffickers in Mexico and China, going after companies that make the chemicals needed for the drug. Brown says the fentanyl epidemic takes a toll on local communities and says 400 Ohioans die every month from fentanyl.
WTOL 11's Melissa Andrews reporting. The head of the Hancock County Veterans Service Office, Nicole Coleman, says this weekend's Veterans Empowerment Spring Fair will provide an opportunity for area veterans and their families and friends to learn about local resources, helpful organizations, employment opportunities, and maybe make some new friends.
A lot of times veterans feel alone, they feel isolated, they feel disconnected, and when we can get them in a room with other veterans, they remember that they're not alone. And my favorite part of these empowerment fairs is watching veterans who don't know each other connect and then leave as friends.
Nicole was on with WFIN's Chris Oaks. You can hear that full interview and the story on our website. The Veterans Empowerment Spring Fair is on Saturday at Owens Community College from 10 to 2. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, a new report out this week from the CDC shows that the birth rate in the U.S. hit an all-time low in 2023. There are many reasons for that, and it's a trend that's actually been happening for decades. But it's interesting that it comes at a time when reproductive issues have taken center stage in the national discourse. Again, for several reasons. As it happens, this is Infertility Awareness Week, and we are joined by Barbara Kalura, President and CEO of Resolve, the National Infertility Association, and Dr. Sesmira Lalwani, Senior Medical Director of Reproductive Medicine and Maternal Health at Ferring Pharmaceuticals. Barbara, let me start with you. As someone who works with and advocates for women and couples who are dealing with the inability to have children, what goes through your mind when you hear all of these political and religious and social arguments over reproductive issues that have so dominated the conversation over the past couple of years?
Well, Chris, it's a great question. I always just want to say, look, we're representing a community of people who want to just have babies. They want to have a family, and they have a medical condition that is causing them to seek medical treatment for their medical condition, but the end result is a baby, and they are wanting to build their family. So our hope is that that access to that care keeps being available and legal, because millions of people need access to this kind of care to build their family.
Are they sometimes kind of the forgotten part of the population when we talk about reproductive issues?
Well, you know, in our country, reproductive health and reproductive rights can be very loaded, can be very divisive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I always kind of center it back to, wait a minute, we're talking about people who want to have babies, who want to grow their family. And yes, that is reproduction. I can't get around that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we want to talk about reproductive rights, we need to look at the whole picture. It's not just about choosing when and if you're going to have a family, but it's also choosing, I want to have a family, but I can't.
Right. Dr. Lalwani, the statistic I have here is that nearly 20% of people experience infertility, and many are not getting the care that they need. So medically speaking, how do you define infertility, and what care do these individuals and couples need that they are not getting? When should someone seek out medical care, talk to a physician if they are unable to get pregnant?
Right. So, infertility, as you rightfully said, it occurs in 1 in 6 people worldwide. So it happens really quite commonly. And the causes could be multifactorial. It could be related to female factors due to dysfunction and ovulation, blocked tubes. Could be related to male factors, a combination of both male and female factors. And sometimes we just don't know what the reason is. So when should they go ahead and seek an evaluation is after 1 year of trying to conceive, when the female partner is less than 35 years of age. And that if she's over 35 years of age, that duration is shortened to 6 months, because with advancing age, female fertility declines. Of course, you also have to take into account the patient's medical, reproductive, sexual history. You're not going to tell like a 32-year-old who's not ovulating regularly every month to wait for that whole year to get an evaluation.
Yeah.
So that also has to be all put together.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. You talk about the fact that there is not really a one-size-fits-all approach in this. There are a number of diverse factors, needs, and, you know, I guess for lack of a better term, fertility journeys, if you will, that people may be on that have to all be considered in this.
You know, Chris, I like to say you need a sperm and you need an egg and you need a uterus. So you need all three to be healthy and to be working properly. Any one of those could have issues. You could have a combination of issues. And so, you know, when we talk about personalized medicine, I always like to say, boy, the infertility journey is about as personalized as you can get, because no two patients are alike. And then, you know, you might choose to not access medical care. You might choose to build your family through adoption. And then there are people who are accessing care because they have a cancer diagnosis.
Mm.
So they might need to preserve their sperm or their egg before they go through a cancer treatment so they can have a family after they get through that. So everyone is different, and I can't stress enough the importance of getting a good diagnosis, looking at all of those issues, and then figuring out what you're comfortable with and what's best for you in how you want to build your family.
So various pathways to parenthood.
And Barbara, you also talk about the importance of community for those who are facing these challenges on the path to parenthood. And you particularly emphasize empowerment and self-advocating. Talk a little bit about that importance, that significance.
You know, the infertility journey is rough. It has a lot of ups and downs along the way. And I can't stress enough the importance of people finding support and finding community, finding their entourage, whatever that may be, friends or family. Maybe it's an organization like Resolve where you find others. This is a tough journey, and it can be very isolating. And it's incredibly powerful when you connect with other people who are going through the same thing, and you're like, wow, I didn't realize that I had a similar journey as somebody else or that other people are going through this. And it really gives you the courage to move forward. It also gives you the courage to ask questions. What's really astounding is when you see people go to their employer and ask for better benefits. I mean, talk about empowerment and advocacy. I mean, that's really saying something. We've also seen, Chris, amazing people advocate to their state legislators, even coming to Washington, D.C., and meeting with their members of Congress, because so many of us don't have health insurance for things like IVF. Even our military, our federal employees, they don't have insurance coverage for IVF, and it takes a lot of people advocating and speaking up. So it's really empowering. I know I keep saying that, but yeah. This is a tough journey, Chris, and I want to just say, don't go it alone. You don't need to.
And actually, Chris, can I just add on to what Barbara said? So having been a practicing reproductive endocrinologist and infertility specialist for over 20 years, I saw up close and personal how challenging this journey is, and also having been a patient myself, so I just can't reiterate enough and reinforce what Barbara said. Don't do this alone.
Is that sense of community and support also helpful in terms of, and again, you know, not to harp on what we were talking about earlier, and all of the other noise and all of the other discussions surrounding reproductive issues, that it really helps people refocus on their own situation as opposed to just being one more statistic in this ongoing debate and discussion.
You know, Chris, I see over and over and over two things that are so important that happen when people advocate. One, they're telling their story a lot of times to a lawmaker who doesn't understand IVF, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. A lot of state and federal legislators don't. But when they hear their constituent talk about this in a real personal way, they realize, yeah, wow, my actions are going to potentially cause this person to either have children or not.
Yeah.
And that's pretty. And then the second thing is, people, when they advocate, they feel like they're doing something positive. This is a journey that takes a lot of control away from you. And finally, you sort of feel like, wow, I've gotten some control back. And I'm advocating, and maybe I'm helping the next person who comes along. Because, Chris, look, if I'm still doing this in 20 years, shame on us, because we would love to see a different environment for our kids.
Yeah.
We work so hard to have our kids.
Right.
I don't want them to go through what we went through.
And
it's also so important to have, like, sorry, Chris, I keep, stopping you, but it's important for education, right? Just educate people, but good trusted resources like resolve.org, Fertility Out Loud, but just trusted resources, because there's so much information out there.
Trying to make this a very important part of the conversation, which maybe at times has been left out in, with all of the debate and all of the different facets of this, working to increase access to fertility care for those who need it really needs to be made a part of the discussion. Again, Barbara Kalura is president and CEO of Resolve, the National Infertility Association. Dr. Sasmira Lalwani, Senior Medical Director of Reproductive Medicine and Maternal Health at Ferring Pharmaceuticals. Thank you both for taking the time this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
So tomorrow, in in case you haven't heard, tomorrow is National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. Go through your medicine cabinet. How many old, unused, expired medications do you have just laying around the house? That can be dangerous. And in case you missed it last week, we spoke with Findlay Police Department Crime Prevention Officer Brian White about the many dangers that are posed by having unused medication in the home. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, so we do actually two medication drives throughout the year, one in the spring, one in the fall, basically trying to take back all those unused expired medications that might find their way onto the streets or in someone's hands that's going to misuse them.
Yeah.
That's really the goal of this.
And that's the interesting part about this that you see. Not only, I mean, obviously, we want to prevent accidental overdoses or even intentional overdoses, and that gets a lot of the attention. But from a law enforcement standpoint, you see this as crime prevention.
Absolutely, because if we can take an element away from any situation, we talk about a crime triangle. Mm-hmm. It requires essentially three sides, including opportunity, which is what this is. Mm-hmm. If we can take that away, it eliminates the possibility of that crime occurring.
People don't realize that these medications that people may have in their home actually can end up on the street being sold to kids or really anyone.
Absolutely. That's a real threat. The more concern is someone wanders into our house, a family member perhaps, goes through our medicine cabinet, finds something that they want to take, and that's how it kind of starts. Now, when you look at the National Center for Drug Abuse Statistics, they talk about 6% of Americans over the age of 12 are misusing prescription medications. Now, 6% doesn't sound like a whole lot, but when you look at the numbers, you're talking millions, tens of millions of people.
You do the math. How often is that intentional or accidental? Because both of those are concerning.
Sure. When we talk about misuse, it could be a number of things. It could be the intentional misuse of medications, right? That's kind of the illegal drug trade that we talk about. It could be sharing our medications. Hey, I know someone has a headache. Here's one of my prescription Vicodin Percocet pills, right? Mm-hmm. Take this, you'll feel better.
Right.
It can also be taking more than we should. And we see this a lot with our elderly population. Maybe kind of forget, did I take my medications today? Mm-hmm. Right. That happens. I think we can all kind of relate to that to some degree.
Yeah. And with respect to the crime aspect of this, in addition to the possibility of these things ending up on the street, it also becomes something of a gateway for someone who might be curious.
Sure, absolutely. And one of the things that we see that's pretty common for us is we have a car break-in, especially summer months coming up. People going around checking car doors, seeing if the car's unlocked, getting inside, stealing the change. And some people keep their medications inside the car, and they end up getting swiped, right? So either that person ends up using them themselves or they end up reselling them.
Yeah. So we mentioned the Prescription Drug Take Back Day is actually next Saturday, and you have a concerted effort to do this.
Correct.
On that day.
Correct.
Right?
Yep. Each one of these events we do, we usually take in a couple hundred pounds worth of medications. Mm-hmm. It's not just prescription medications. You can bring up anything that you want to get rid of, including over-the-counter medications. Mm-hmm. We'll take about everything. But that's going to be Saturday, April 27th, from 8 until noon.
Okay.
Pretty simple process. You just drive into the City of Findlay Municipal Building parking lot. We'll come out to the car, take the medications, and you can drive on your way.
Yeah, important to note, too, that that is not the only opportunity people have to dispose of their unused medications. This is actually an ongoing initiative.
Absolutely. The police department, we have a drop box there. You walk in the front door, don't even have to go through a security checkpoint. You can just drop them off, and basically it looks like an old mailbox. Same way over at the Hancock County Sheriff's Office.
Yeah.
Those are always open.
And I know a number of pharmacies actually have locations where you can drop off unused medications in a secure box that's similar to that.
Sure. And those are always kind of changing. It kind of depends on security and things like that. But there are some pharmacies that will take these as well.
Yeah. Bottom line is that we want to get these out of the home. And it's mostly an awareness thing next Saturday.
Correct. And most of us, I think we can all think of a medication that we had that we just, you know, maybe didn't end up taking the whole thing, although you should, right? Take all your medications as directed.
Exactly.
But we end up with medications that are expired on use, just kind of sitting around. We want to get rid of them, but we don't want to flush them down the toilet because that creates an entirely different issue, right?
Different danger, right?
Don't want to throw them in the trash can, so we just hold on to them. Well, this is the avenue to get rid of them.
Again, tomorrow, National Prescription Drug Take-Back Day. Officer Brian White with us from last week on the program. A lot of dangers that come from hanging on to those expired and unused medications for yourself and for others. So make sure that you get those disposed of properly this weekend. More details at WFIN in the news section of the website. You can get more info on National Prescription Drug Take Back Day.
Now, the Good Mornings Community and Business Spotlight.
We're putting T&H Lift in the spotlight this morning, courtesy of Ohio Means Jobs. If you are looking for a job, they have some available. Jenny Miracle Turner is with us from T&H Lift. First of all, T&H Lift, still a relatively new company people may not necessarily be familiar with. So talk a little bit about what it is that you do.
We are a taxi service, full service taxi service. We are not open 24 hours a day, though, yet. Okay. We run 6 a.m. to midnight, 7 days a week. But we will go anywhere we're needed. Columbus Airport, Cleveland Airport, Dayton, Detroit, doesn't matter. We'll go anywhere we're needed.
So locally or long range?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's really no limit to what we'll do.
And so you're looking for drivers, I'm assuming?
We are definitely looking for drivers. There's even a possibility for a part-time dispatcher.
Okay.
And dispatchers, the advantage of that is our business phone is an iPhone. So they can even dispatch from home if they would like to do that. But we are looking for some drivers. That's always a necessity.
What are some of the requirements then?
Commercial insurance for taxi is very strict. It is not my requirements. It's my insurance company.
Sure.
The minimum age I have been able to get approved for the insurance is roughly 26, 27 years old.
Okay.
Got to have a very clean driving record.
Obviously.
Right. There's also a city ordinance, as well as one of my contracts requires a BCI FBI background check. So clean criminal record is beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the main requirements, and then flexibility with scheduling.
Now, are people using their own vehicles, or you provide the vehicles?
No, we provide the vehicles. We pay for fuel. We pay for everything. The only out-of-pocket expense to working for me is your cell phone.
Okay. And how would someone apply for one of these positions?
Unfortunately, I do not have an online application yet. I am trying to figure that out.
Okay.
But they are welcome to stop in the office. We're at 2410 North Main Street. It's the old Marilube Express building at North Main.
Okay.
We are in there, and I am generally in the office from 8 to 4 Monday through Friday. You can always check with one of the drivers if you happen to be taking a ride. Check with the drivers. I try to make sure that they have applications on hand if needed, or just give us a call and we can go from there.
And what's the number?
419-314-1550.
And one of the really cool things about getting involved with a startup, with a new company, is that you have the potential for all kinds of advancement opportunities and, getting in on the ground floor.
Yeah,
that can be exciting.
Yeah, we're only three. We turned 3 years old.
Okay.
So we are still a relatively new company.
Yeah.
We are growing daily. There's always room for advancement. There's I have a driver supervisor. I have a dispatch supervisor, but that doesn't mean that they're going to be there forever.
Right.
Doesn't mean that I don't need other people to step up and help when needed. And there's always rewards for that.
All right. Again, Jenny Miracle Turner, T&H Lift, with us this morning in the spotlight, courtesy of Ohio Means Jobs. Jenny, once again, the phone number is
419-314-1550. Thanks, Chris.
The Community and Business Spotlight is a promotional advertisement paid for by the featured sponsor.
Well, as we mentioned, you're going to see a lot of caring people hard at work around town this weekend as part of the Backyard Mission Trip. Leanne Ireland is with us once again on the line this morning. And Leanne, we were talking a couple of weeks ago about this and crossing our fingers. It looks like the weather is, for the most part, going to cooperate. Maybe a few scattered showers here and there. But all in all, nice and warm. It's going to be a beautiful weekend to get out and help our neighbors.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be great, Chris. We're looking forward to a good day of serving our community and We have lots of projects out there, and we are still looking for volunteers.
I was gonna ask how many projects are you hoping to complete all in this single weekend or in this single day?
Well, it's different, right? I mean, we will complete as many as we can, mm-hmm. and that, I guess that's like the disclaimer. We currently have 100 projects. This was last check.
Okay. That's what I was getting at.
So it could have increased since this was last on the 21st. So almost the beginning of the week. It's probably a little more now. So we have about 99 projects and we have 88 volunteers. So we have less than one volunteer for every project, if you look at it that way.
Thus, we
need more volunteers.
Right, and it is, I was going to say, it is never too late to pitch in and help out. You will still take volunteers right up to the day of. The Backyard Mission trip is tomorrow, and some folks, as you were mentioning on the program a couple of weeks ago, some folks will do one project and they're done for the day. Others will go around to multiple projects. No matter how motivated you are, you can put folks to work.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, so you can do multiple projects, and it really depends on the scope of the project, right? Like how big or how detailed it is. I would like to mention that I saw an email from some Dale Brower on our team, and there is some need for some carpentry skills. It doesn't have to be, you know, you don't have to be an absolute, you know,
construction professional. Carpenter. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. But you have to have some carpentry skills. So if there's anyone out there listening, show up tomorrow morning between 7 and 7:30 out at the fairgrounds in the Old Mill Stream building, mm-hmm. and we will get you signed up and matched up with a project. So you can come tomorrow morning, and we'll have computers there, and we will just get you registered, and we will put you to work.
Now, that being said, you don't necessarily have to have any special skills at all. A lot of what you do is just basic cleanup, you know, yards and, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right. Most of our projects are yard work, but I did see an open project where windows need to be washed. So if you like to wash some windows, we got a project for you.
I don't know that anybody likes to, but this is one of those things that you can do and really leaves you with a great feeling of accomplishment, of community, and that's really what it's all about.
That's it. I mean, this is just our way to give back to our community and serve Findlay and Hancock County for people that just need a little extra help.
Amen to that. And when you're driving around town tomorrow and you see all of these people out working hard in their T-shirts or their Backyard Mission projects, you know what is happening. It's all over town, just a terrific event. And again, if folks want to help out, what's the best way at this point to do that? What do they do if they are so motivated?
I think the best way to do it now is to come out tomorrow morning.
Okay.
You could register. You could easy for us is to go and for you to register online and get all your paperwork done. But at this point, it'd be hard to like assign a project and all that.
Yeah.
So just if you want to go to findlaybmt.com and sign up to be a volunteer and then show up tomorrow morning at the fairgrounds between 7 and 7:30, we can match you up with a project or a team.
Very easy to do, and it is something that will leave you with a great sense of accomplishment and a great sense of community. The Backyard Mission Project happening tomorrow, and again, 7 o'clock, between 7 and 7:30 at the Old Mill Stream Fairgrounds, where everybody gathers, right?
That's right.
Okay, very good. Leanne Ireland with the Backyard Mission Trip with us this morning. Leanne, thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Anyone who has ever dealt with the hassles of air travel will appreciate this story. Maybe you can commiserate with this, or maybe it will make you feel better about the hassles that you have experienced. Mildred Kirchenbaum is when she flies, she has an issue. She's 100 years old, born in 1923, and she still enjoys traveling even at the sprite age of 100. But because she was born in 1923, she is often mistakenly identified as a minor. She's 100 years old, and they treat her like a kid. Some airline systems just use the last two digits for the birth year, because we are past that, you know, 1999, 2000 kind of thing. They've gone back to just using two dates for the birth year. And so when they enter her birth date in the year 23, she pops up on the system as being a one-year-old. So Ms. Kirchenbaum says, as soon as I check in, I am considered an unescorted minor. You're an unescorted minor, it's flagged in the system. The supervisor has to come out and they have to see her through security. They have to escort her through security as a minor because she's got this special flag on her ticket. Luckily, Mildred doesn't seem to be too bothered and gives herself extra time at the airport to sort it out. And frankly, she's probably happy for the company. You know, that's... Can you imagine showing up to check your bags and, you know, check in with the airline and see as soon as they look at her, I'm sure that the gate agent knows, or the ticket agent knows exactly what's going on. But now, Mildred, let us escort you through security here. Elsewhere in the broken news, our dumb criminals of the day are Miguel Ruiz and Estrella Pereira. Miguel and Estrella claim that they didn't mean to trigger the emergency lockdown protocol of a daycare facility in Miami. They were just posing for social media. Might have been the guns they were carrying at the time. Ms. Pereira says, we're bodybuilders and we're into the social media thing. And apparently Mr. Ruiz thought it would be cool to take a picture with a gun, because with the muscles and the guns, it sounds really cool to photograph something like that. And those things get a lot of attention on social media. You got muscles and guns and America. However, the problem is their photo shoot caused a panic at a daycare facility, Devonair Kitty College in Miami, as employees feared for their children's lives. The couple reportedly aimed two rifles at the building while posing for the photographs. Fortunately, no one was injured. The couple has been charged with aggravated assault with a firearm and exhibiting a firearm near school property. Might want to take a look around and just make sure that you're not near a daycare when you whip out your guns. Speaking of schools and dumb criminals, a former, now former, high school athletic director in Maryland is accused of using artificial intelligence to frame the school's principal. The Baltimore Banner reports that Dazan Darian is charged with disrupting school activities after police say he faked Pikesville High School principal Eric Eiswirth's voice and circulated an audio recording on social media. The audio clip, the faked audio clip, made disparaging remarks about African-American students, school staff, and Pikesville's Jewish community. It was all fake. The principal was removed as the Baltimore County Schools and police launched an investigation into the recording, but they found out that it was the former high school athletic director, former athletic director of the high school, who faked the whole thing. Can't imagine why he would have lost his job. Hard to believe. Apparently he was angry because he lost his job, but I can't figure out why. He seems like such an upstanding, stable individual. I'm guessing he's in even more trouble now. Elsewhere in the broken news, another elderly person in the broken news. This time, a 74-year-old woman is facing serious prison time for allegedly robbing a bank at gunpoint. Despite having no prior criminal record, Ann Mayers attempted to rob an Ohio bank at gunpoint. This is from Fairfield Township, outside of Cincinnati. Fairfield Township outside of Cincinnati. Ann Mayers, M-A-Y-E-R-S, Mayers, Myers. She's 74 years old. Attempted to rob a bank at gunpoint. Officers caught up with her at her house in Hamilton, where they found the 2014 silver Hyundai Elantra she was driving during as the getaway car in the robbery, and they also located the gun she used. She surrendered without a struggle. She's been charged with aggravated felony or aggravated robbery with a firearm and tampering with evidence, which are both felonies, according to the department. And why did she rob a bank? She needed money. This is actually pretty sad. She needed money because she lost everything she had in an online scam. Wow. That actually is a sad twist to the story. But still, that's really not the solution. You know, that's probably maybe set up a GoFundMe or publicize your case. Maybe some very generous people will help you out. Robbing a bank seems a bit extreme. And finally, in the broken news this morning, this is our viral video of the day. And you can find this on TikTok, the user at AJMagnifica18. Let's see here. Alana Mattson is the name of this person who posted the video where she chronicled her resourceful cat's amusing talent for turning on the sink in her home and helping himself to a drink of water. The cat can actually turn on the faucet and take a drink of the water. But the problem is the cat doesn't always turn the water back off. And that led to a rather unfortunate situation. The first few times she found the water running, Alana says she assumed her kids were the culprits. We thought someone was getting up during the night and leaving the sink on. But of course, the kids denied it. It wasn't until the video she set up a security camera to catch the culprit in action. That's when she realized that her cat, Sam, was turning on the water in the sink. She said, "We started putting a rubber band around the handle to prevent him from turning it on out of fear that this exact scenario would happen. It didn't work because Sam still managed to open the faucet and sit on the drain. He opened the faucet, sat on the drain, causing the sink to overflow, and it ended up flooding the upstairs bathroom of the home. Things went from bad to worse when her husband went into the kitchen and found water dripping from the ceiling, which eventually caved in. All because the cat was turning on the faucet. Aside from having to replace the ceiling, Alana says they have now had to spring for a new sink that has an overflow valve." Can you imagine trying to explain that to your insurance company? Oh my goodness. You see, my cat turns on the sink but doesn't know how to turn it off. Yeah, I'm not sure that the insurance company would go for that. There you go. That is today's broken news report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
This is Ed Glentz with OSU Extension. It's planting season. Drivers will be sharing roads with tractors and farm machinery. Be alert for slow-moving vehicles, especially on roads with limited visibility. Watch out for equipment pulling in and out of fields. Drivers and farmers, let's work together this spring to keep our roads safe and accident-free.
This message from WFIN and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. We were talking earlier about National Infertility Awareness Week and the struggles that millions of people face in starting a family. Well, being a parent is no picnic either. The demands of modern parenting are leading many moms and dads to suffer parental burnout. This according to a recent survey from The Ohio State University. Now, this was a small survey, small sample size, 250 parents, but the findings are significant. 66%, two-thirds of the parents in the survey say they experience feelings of loneliness and isolation, with moms feeling it more commonly than dads do. 38% of respondents say they frequently or sometimes have no support in raising their kids. 62% of those polled felt burned out being a parent. And if you are raising a family and feel the need to get away and reconnect with other grown-ups, you are certainly not alone. Remember, I had that? Just, I need to get away from the kids for a while. You and a lot of other parents, in fact, nearly 80% of those in the poll say that they would value a day to get away and reconnect with other parents in their same situation outside of work and home and away from the kids for a day or two. The findings in this survey dovetail with those from a study published in 2021 by the National Institutes of Health, which concluded that parental loneliness has a direct impact on the mental health of both parent and child, which I think is significant because even though we may not realize it, when we feel those, we experience those feelings of loneliness, isolation, depression, stress, being a parent, that transfers or filters through to our kids as well. So something to keep in mind if you are a parent or if you are someone who can maybe help out a parent who might be feeling a little burnout these days. Once again, as is customary, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio to finish up the week with another collection of recipes from Kyra's Kitchen. Good morning, dear.
Good morning.
I love this segment for a number of reasons. Number one, I never have to worry about it. I know we're going to have recipes. Last segment of the program on a Friday, so it's one less thing that I have to worry about.
Yes.
With respect to scheduling. But also, I get to try out most of these recipes.
And most of them.
This one is a really yummy one to lead off this morning. It is a chicken Alfredo ravioli recipe. Chicken Alfredo ravioli. Although, when you did this the other day, yeah, we didn't have any ravioli. No. So
I had the tortellini stuffed.
You can really use that. Yeah, you can really use any kind of stuffed pasta or, you
just
know,
gives it that extra flavor.
Pasta at all, but the chicken Alfredo ravioli. What do we got here?
Yes, so 2 tablespoons of butter, 2 tablespoons of minced garlic, salt and pepper to taste, 2 cups of chicken breast cooked and diced, 24-ounce package of your cheese ravioli, fresh or frozen, cooked and drained, 4-ounce cream cheese at room temperature, 15-ounce jar of Alfredo sauce, or you can make your own. That's what I did. 2 tablespoons of dried basil, 6 ounces of Parmesan cheese grated, and 1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg. So cook the ravioli according to package instructions, drain and set aside. In a large skillet, melt the butter over medium heat. Add your garlic, your salt, and your pepper. Stir in the cream cheese. Blend until melted and smooth. Pour in your Alfredo sauce. Mix until smooth. Remove from the heat. Add the Parmesan cheese, dried basil, and nutmeg. Whisk until velvety. Add the cooked diced chicken breast and ravioli to the skillet. Stir well to coat the ingredients evenly with the sauce. Simmer for a few minutes and serve.
Simple as that.
Yep, I use my electric wok.
I was going to say, you use the wok to cook the chicken. Did you do everything in the wok? Everything.
Yeah, I did it all in the wok.
Yeah. One of those great utilitarian devices that far too few kitchens have these days.
I love it.
Is the electric wok. But if you have one, this is a good recipe to try in that. You also have a recipe. We got the Italian thing going on here. A cheddar Parmesan bread oven recipe.
So this is just 1.5 cups of your Bisquick, your baking mix, 1 cup of shredded cheddar cheese, 1/2 a cup of fresh grated Parmesan cheese, 1/2 teaspoon of dried Italian seasoning, 1/2 a cup of milk, 1 large egg, and 2 tablespoons of butter melted. So preheat your oven to 425 degrees. In a bowl, mix the biscuit, baking mix, cheddar cheese, Parmesan cheese, Italian seasoning, milk, and egg until it becomes a thick batter. Spread the batter evenly in a loaf, greased loaf pan. Pour the melted butter over. Bake for 25 to 30 minutes until golden brown and a toothpick inserted comes out clean.
Simple as that.
Yeah. And really easy and really yummy.
Yeah.
So these are sort of like the biscuits. It's more of a loaf, but like the ones you get at Red Lobster.
Okay.
But,
all right.
But well, there you loaf. Go.
Okay. In loaf form.
Yes.
And the cheddar Parmesan bread oven. By the way, reminded me because this is a cheddar Parmesan bread. The chicken Alfredo ravioli is very cheesy as well.
Yes, it is.
If you're not into cheesy stuff, you might want to cut back on some of that. Or use a pasta, not a cheese stuffed pasta.
Correct.
You could do that. Would cut down on
some of the cheese.
If you're not a cheese
person. Who doesn't like cheese?
I know, but it's very cheesy. Let's see here. I just thought I would point that out. And for dessert, have a recipe for chocolate chip pudding cake.
Yes. So this is 1 13.25-ounce box of triple chocolate fudge cake mix. If you don't have that, if you just have a chocolate cake mix, that's fine. Also, 2 eggs, 1 cup water, 1/2 a cup of vegetable oil, 1 box of instant chocolate pudding, dry, about 3.5-ounce box. So you don't want to make the pudding. You just want the powder.
Yeah. Okay.
2 cups of semi-sweet chocolate chips.
I'm laughing at this. I'm chuckling at this because you've got the triple chocolate fudge cake mix. Then you've got a box of chocolate pudding.
Yes.
And then you've got the chocolate chips on top. Chocolate.
Yes.
This
if you
is,
like chocolate, this you're
is a death
this.
By chocolate kind of recipe right here.
So yummy. So this is one that's really good after you bake it. You can cut it in like just pieces and then put it in your freezer and then just take out one piece at a time, especially on those days where you just need a little bit
need
of chocolate.
Need a little chocolate.
Yes.
Or a lot of chocolate.
Yes.
Yeah.
So preheat your oven to 350 degrees, grease and flour a bundt pan. In a large mixing bowl, add the cake mix, eggs, water, oil, and pudding mix. Use an electric mixer and blend for 2 minutes. Fold in semi-sweet chocolate chips, combine thoroughly, bake for 40 to 45 minutes or until toothpick inserted comes out clean. Cool for about 10 minutes before removing from the pan onto a serving plate. Serve warm with ice cream and hot fudge sauce if you want some more goodness. You just have one of those days where you just need it
chocolate
all.
Fudge cake, the chocolate pudding, and the chocolate chips, and then add some hot fudge.
And some ice cream, and you are yummy good
ice
to go.
Cream. I was thinking before I actually saw that in the recipe, this would be great with big scoop of vanilla ice cream right there. Again, the recipes for the chicken Alfredo ravioli, the cheddar Parmesan bread, and the chocolate chip pudding cake are all on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, are they not?
Yep.
Okay, so you can go there right now at Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook and find all of those recipes and past recipes that we have highlighted on the program. So make sure that you bookmark that page or follow the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page for the very latest stuff. And there is if there is something that you are looking for recipe-wise or if you have a favorite recipe that you would like to share, you can do it that way. Share it there on the Facebook page. You can also email it to us, goodmornings at WFIN.com. All one word, good mornings with an S at good WFIN.com. And we'll get it that way. And who knows, your recipe could be featured sometime in the future.
So yep.
If you, and if folks have any twist on one of the recipes, for example, the chicken Alfredo ravioli that we did without the ravioli, or you do something different to put a twist on that, you can share that on the Facebook page as well and give it to everybody else to try. All right. Very good. We also have that link up at our webpage, of course, goodmornings.net. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the program where? At our webpage, goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, a closer look at two new federal regulations that were handed down this week. The FTC has handed down a new rule outlawing non-compete provisions in employment contracts, opening a new battleground between labor and management. And the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are mandating substantial staffing increases for nursing care facilities. But can the industry meet the requirements and at what cost? So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, gone out and make it a good day, a great weekend. We'll catch you back here next week.